the Bike Church Community Bike Shop, and Tool Cooperative. It's open every Monday through Saturday, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m., downtown Santa Cruz, 703 Pacific Avenue, Suite B. Call 425-BIKE. That's 425-BIKE for the Bike Church Community Bike Shop and Tool Cooperative. Do not need to be a mechanic to use the Bike Church do-it-yourself repair facility. There are folks, church ministers there, mechanics, that are there to teach you how to repair your bicycle. Encourage people to learn by getting their hands dirty. Familiarize yourself with the machine and fix your bike. That's what it's all about. It's like $5 for a drop-in rate, $20 for a monthly membership. There's a website here, santacruzhub.org/bikechurch. Check it out there. Again, Bike Church Community Co-op, Tool Cooperative, Monday through Saturday, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m., 831-425-BIKE. They're located at 703 Pacific Avenue, Suite B, downtown Santa Cruz.
And thank you, Skidmark Bob. It's Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. So pay no attention to the feedback and tune in. Coming up next, 2 hours of Civil Rights Someday. Special guest Brian Parkett and hopefully a call-in from Santa Monica. Stay tuned. Welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz's Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. It's Wednesday, January 31st, 2008, about 6:05. It's raining out there. Wet, wet, wet. In the studio with me is that wet rat. Well, we got two wet rats here, me and him. He may be wetter than I am because he may be coming homeless shortly. Brian Parquette, how you doing?
All right, how you doing?
Good. Now, we've been playing a number of your interviews, your taped interviews, and, boy, it's pretty disconcerting. Mostly it's been around the issue of Measure K, the Santa Cruz ordinance passed by 64% of the voters last year that requires the police to make marijuana enforcement on private property for those over 21 the lowest priority on their agenda. And you have presented at least two complaints to either the entire Measure K board, which rarely meets these days. They've got a meeting coming up in 6 months now. And they aren't even holding subcommittee meetings, according to an email I received from Vice Chair Eric Rice. But you presented at least two complaints that the clean bill of health, which Zach Friend, Santa Cruz Police Department, mini Goebbels, I call him, kind of sort of our small town Goebbels, who likes to paint a very rosy picture of the police department and a very nasty picture of those who the police department doesn't like, whether it be Tony Madrigal for an incautious comment about racial profiling or activists planning up for a peaceful demonstration downtown on New Year's where there is surveillance involved, and he's one of the guys sent in to do the surveilling of a peaceful political event, or whether it's Homies for the Homeless and their protest at City Hall, talking about the fact that 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people out there in the rain tonight have, well, there's space for about 160 of them, and the rest of them are faced $97 citations. That's going to be apparently your condition, your fate, your, well, the problem you're going to be facing soon, Brian, because I know that you've been telling me that you are planning to move out of your house, unfortunately, into a homeless situation under some serious pressure. We're going to be talking about that in a minute. But again, Measure K Commission was presented with your testimony, which I played here on the radio, to the effect that at the Bookshop Santa Cruz, you, well, tell me what happened again at the Bookshop Santa Cruz as you were taking a dump or coming out of the bathroom. We've all heard all the great praise for the Coonerty bathrooms, and indeed, I'm very glad that the Coonerties keep their bathrooms open to customers, not banned people like me, but and perhaps you now because you're banned. But you know, for the general population, it's always nice to have a bathroom available because the town is so stingy with its bathrooms. But you were in the bathroom. What happened there?
Well, I take a lot of medication. It's not just the fact I get Social Security for post-traumatic stress disorder. I also take a lot of blood pressure medications, one of which is hydrochlorothiazide. Mm-hmm. And so I'm constantly having to go to the bathroom. Whether I have to go to the bathroom or not, sometimes I think I need to go to take a leak, but I don't need to take it. And sometimes I do need to take a leak, and it's just it's unbelievable, like, this medication is, like, for blood pressure and all this, and for water retention.
What kind of a condition do you have that requires that?
It's like some type of heart failure where you start, like, collecting water in your lower legs or something like that.
How long have you had this condition?
2 years, I think, 2-3 years.
Hmm. And do you have any other disabilities that people should know about that are relevant to?
Oh, no, I have type 2 diabetes and, I guess congenital heart failure in some way, shape, or form.
I hope you're not failing at the moment. I don't want
no.
to haul you out of the studio.
I definitely have blood pressure problems where, like, in heated situations, my blood pressure will go through the roof, like when I got arrested.
Well, so let's go back to that. You were in the bathroom, trying to relieve your bladder, and then what happened? In the Bookshop Santa Cruz, on private property where the police are supposed not to come on unless it's absolutely the lowest priority or there's some other crime involved. What happened?
Well, I came outside the bathroom, and there was Officer Aldridge and another officer. It was a community service officer. They said, "Can you step outside with us, Mr. Parquette?"
And, of course, your answer should have been, am I free to go?
I'm not terribly bright when it comes to these situations.
No, it's not a matter of being bright, Brian. It's a matter, actually, of training because, you know, a lot of people, even people who are very, know what to say, get intimidated because police are trained, just as we need to train ourselves, to intimidate you. I mean, they do it almost without malice, because it's part of what they're supposed to do to control you and get from you the answers they want and the behavior that they expect. So if you want to resist that, you have to actually counter train, which is to say, officer, you know, am I free to go? And if they say no, then you say, nothing more to say. I'd like to speak to an attorney. I don't consent to a search. That leaves them dead. They can't ask you any questions they want. You just sort of look at them. You say again, I do not consent to a search. I want to see an attorney, and I have nothing to say to you. The idea often that you can talk your way out of situations is something that the police encourage you to believe. But as you know from what happened subsequently, and you're about to remind us of that since we've talked about it on the air before, but maybe we have some new listeners who haven't heard about it. It can be damaging to talk to the police. Anyway, so there were the police in the bookshop Santa Cruz amidst the rows of the progressive Coonerty books, and what did they say to you?
So they wanted me to step outside and talk to them.
Take out flying! You didn't say, officer, why don't you two go outside and start to fight, and if I'm not there, you can start without me! Sorry, I got to relax.
Like I said, I'm not too bright.
No, it's not that I'm bright. It's a matter of
you learn the hard way.
Well, I don't know if I've ever said that to the police. It might not be the wisest thing to do. They, after all, have guns, tasers, batons.
I'm sure they already had a preconceived idea of what they were going to do.
Well,
and
it's it. Can we step outside? Had you spoken to these officers before that day? Had you noticed them following you? Had they had any interaction with them previously? Or anything you feel comfortable talking about?
I think there had been a smokeout previous.
Marijuana smokeout?
Yeah.
The devil weed?
Using, yeah.
Mary Jane.
It was some quite intriguing, rather spicy, I think it was called Purple Kushberry.
I see. So when was it? Well, but anyway, this was the same day. Had the police seen you smoking publicly and followed you?
I don't know. That is altogether a possibility.
I see. Well, see, that might, on the other hand, actually mitigate against your Measure K case, because if you're smoking in public, that's different than if you're smoking on private property. Did the police indicate to you that they had, or did you ever see the police?
I was
report?
Not smoking on private property, and I don't know if I want to talk about it any more than that. But
well, but when you eventually were caught with marijuana on your person.
Well, yeah, they led me outside and searched my backpack.
With or without your permission?
Without my permission.
Right.
At first, he asked me, "Do you have marijuana?" I thought, all right, well, this is a no-brainer. Of course I got medical marijuana.
The real no-brainer is, officers, I don't want to answer your questions. You know, have you stopped beating your wife, officer? You know, I'm not interested in chatting with you about my life. You know, go talk to somebody else. I mean, unless you have evidence to believe that I'm committing a crime, then arrest me. But I'm not going to give you more evidence. Thank you very much. Anyway, so, but you said you
learned the hard way.
Yeah, you do. Go ahead. So you acknowledge you had marijuana.
Okay, and he asked if he said, I want to search you. I said, don't. Then I said, all right, I don't consent to a search. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, do possess medical marijuana in the form of tea bags.
Uh-huh.
And because I like to make tea.
Right.
And reference Boston Tea Party. You know?
I see. You're a tea head, eh?
Raise your right hand, repeat after me. I, Brian, swear to uphold the Constitution as written in him.
But what did these? What did they say? They found how large were these jars of tea? You had three. Of them, I think?
They were 1 ounce jars
of marijuana.
Of
tea
marijuana,
bags.
Yeah. And one jar jars. Had like 20.
Like the size of a small water bottle, or even like a cup. How big were they?
They're like I don't know. Like the size of a 12 ounce cup, I guess.
12 ounce paper cup. So then, what did the officers say to you?
Said you're under arrest for felony possession.
Felony possession, because you had more than an ounce of marijuana or something?
Yeah, I think it came to an ounce and a half.
Okay, so then what happened? You were taken to jail?
You arrested me, took me to jail, confiscated my backpack, I had a digital scale. He took my cell phone, I think I had approximately $300. He put down $235, and then he reduced
Aldrich
it.
Did?
Yeah, Mr. Aldrich, or Officer Aldrich.
Well, maybe there's a charge for getting taken to jail. Have you ever thought? I mean, it is inconvenient for them to have to break up their day with these trips to the jail, so maybe they needed to pay for the gas.
I don't know.
I don't either. Again, I'm not saying no. Are you accusing Officer Aldridge of some kind of corruption?
I can't
here?
Accuse him of corruption if I can't prove it, and I can't prove it because I'm not exactly sure. You know, I thought there was $300 there,
so Officer Aldridge,
and he told me straight to my face, I don't have to count your money in front of you.
Well,
right in front of the jail personnel, actually.
So you think
was flabbergasted. I was like, what do you mean you don't have to count my money? Isn't there like, doesn't that like create suspicion?
Well, obviously it does because, you know, you and I are wondering what the situation is given your recollection of different amount of money or that's.
Do I want to accuse Mr. Aldridge of corruption or stealing my money?
Well, who knows? Maybe the money.
No, I don't want to accuse any cop of that. I don't want to believe that a cop is capable of doing that, even though we know that it's happened in the past. But when a person tells you that he's arresting you for possession of plant matter and
criminal plant matter,
he confiscates your money, your 200 and some odd. Well, he claims 235. All right, fine, 235. Your cell phone. You know.
So you were then held in jail on these felony charges.
Yeah, that was the only charge: felony conspiracy of possession
conspiracy?
With intent. Yeah, it was conspiracy with intent. I think is the felony charge.
So the word conspiracy that was involved.
Well, I think conspiracy would be the word that would define that law. It's possession with intent to distribute.
Well, that's one law. And conspiracy is when you conspire with one or more people to do it. I mean, you can do it. You can be selling it yourself without conspiring with somebody else. You can go out and people say, I want to sell marijuana. Or you can talk to three other guys and say, or three other women and say, let's go out and sell some marijuana together. That would be conspiracy or intending to do that. But nonetheless, how long were you held in jail on this charge?
Well, he took me to jail, and 5 hours later, I bailed out on a $5,000 bail.
And how did you cook up all that money from all your marijuana profits, your heroin ring that you're running here, Brian?
I called a friend, and he insisted on bailing me out, and he didn't have to do that, and he doesn't owe me anything, and he has nothing to do with any of it, and they're just nice, kind, caring, loving people that...
So somebody put up $5,000 to bail you out.
Which goes against everything.
Now, was the bail $5,000 or $50,000?
$5,000.
So they paid the entire amount, which they're getting back in 60 days.
Well, that's what's so funny, since they're out of town. They had to hire a bail bondsman, give them the full $5,000 on their credit card, plus $515 or something. And then it ties up their $5,000, which costs interest.
Right.
So you're actually paying more than $515.
So then you went to trial on this charge subsequently? Or you went to arraignment and got a public defender?
2 weeks later, I went to arraignment. I was assigned a public defender on the spot, and she insisted on me. Well, first the judge is like, he wanted me to take diversion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, diversion? Well, before I showed up to court, I got a medical marijuana card.
Right.
Okay. I showed up to court.
Had you you didn't have a doctor's recommendation previously?
You know, I never took it seriously.
Have you ever talked to your doctor about the effect of marijuana on these various conditions you'd had or not?
I'm on Social Security. $100 is a lot of money to me.
I understand, but had you ever... You obviously talked to a doctor because you've got medication for other conditions, right? You say you take medication for high blood pressure.
Well, he had no problem filling out a letter for me. I didn't get the medical marijuana card from him. I went to Medican, made an appointment, went in there early before the court date, filled out all their paperwork, paid them, I think, $95.
Right.
Because I get almost Social Security, so I get a discount, I guess. I don't know, $95.
And then you went to the county and got the card. Or you got the card directly from Medican.
No, actually, I know. I went and filled out the paperwork, and then they take you into this room, and there's this doctor there. And she says, all right, show me some of your medications. And I showed her some of my medications. And she went down, read the thing, and she says, ask me a couple of questions. Examined my case. And then she said, all right, here's a medical marijuana authorization. And
you had to go to another office to get the card.
No, they sent it to me in the mail.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah, they take, right there on the spot, they take your ID. Yeah. Right there on the spot, they take your ID, they stick it into a machine, they photocopy it, and make it part of that thing. And then they take your picture for the card, and then...
This is at the Medican offices.
Yeah.
And Medican is a private group that's in the county. It's not the people across from the county building downtown.
No, it's up on Seabright.
So But again, my question to you is, you saw a doctor a couple of years before, and he prescribed different medications for you, right?
Yeah, I've been getting medications all my life.
Did you ever mention to him that you used marijuana successfully and that it was something, and did you ever ask him about that? I see your card. Yeah.
He knew.
So you had spoken to him about it?
Yes.
And what was his reaction when you talked to your prior doctor about that? Did he say, I'm not sure about it, it's a great idea, let me know how it goes? What was his reaction?
Smoking marijuana is not good for your cardiovascular system and your lungs, especially if you're a person like me who's had asthma all his life.
Right.
And is on a battery of medications for cardiovascular disease.
So he advised against it?
He advised against smoking it or smoking too much of it, and it's better to either eat it or make tea with it.
Did he advise you not to use it at all?
No. He's not advising me. It's kind of, I don't know, to me it's common sense. Look, I'm not advocating or telling people they should or should not smoke marijuana.
No,
it's up to the individual. I don't care about the doctor.
What I'm trying to get at, though, is did your doctor previously have a conversation about you where he gave you at least a verbal recommendation that said, I don't think it's a good idea if you smoke it, but it seems to have, if it has a beneficial effect for you, then you should take it and eat in say, you know, solid form as something to be eaten. Did he say something like that to you?
I imagine that would be his opinion.
But he never said anything specifically about it that you remember.
Well, the biggest thing that between me and him is the cigarettes, not the
right.
marijuana.
Well, the issue I have is, though, that, see, even if you don't have a written recommendation, even if you're given an oral recommendation by a doctor, I believe, I got to recheck Proposition 215, but I believe that kind of recommendation has some force, too. So it could be that the police, in seizing your marijuana, were acting against the spirit of Proposition 215 and even against the letter, although...
Never mind my tea bags.
The point being that even though marijuana is, you know, illegal under state law, except as a medicine it's not, and those who passed the law originally, I'm learning it more as I read articles by a guy called Fred Gardner, who pointed out that Dennis Perone originally put this measure together, Measure 215, back in 1996, wrote it as broadly as possible, because the objective was indeed to help the sick, but it was also to protect as many people as possible who were smoking or using marijuana, and for a variety of conditions. But then they brought in a fancy expert from New York when they tried to pass the law, who argued that, oh, we're only using it, this was to persuade people who were nervous about marijuana, we're only using this as a defense in court once you're arrested. But that wasn't what the actual wording of Proposition 215 said, according to the analysis by this writer, Fred Gardner, who I think has, you know, been studying it for a number of years, and I'm tending to follow his view.
For the record, I would say that the major reasons for me smoking marijuana would be diabetic neuropathy and depression, the two main things that affect me by all my other conditions.
So you
the major one's depression.
Right.
And the other one is the fact that I've got diabetes and diabetic neuropathy.
Gotcha. You went to court, and your public defender advised you to do what?
First, they wanted me to accept
drug diversion. And what is that?
Where I would have to show up and with other marijuana heads and
confess your sins. Hallelujah. Okay.
Or try to quit, which I understand. You know, people are trying to quit. There's what's called marijuana addiction. I've seen it many a times.
So you actually believe it
but
exists?
But it's usually based on cost. Addiction is based on cost, strictly, is the fact that marijuana is expensive and costs a lot of money. So when people run out of this stuff, they go freaking crazy.
Well, but, I mean, it's, you know, what, are you addicted to chocolate? I guess I'm kind of addicted to chocolate, but I don't know if I go crazy if I don't have it. I mean, I feel...
I'm an expert in chocolate.
Yeah, well, chocolate's good. So you didn't want to take the drug diversion program. Your public defender wanted you to, and what happened next?
So then it was, just accept an under an ounce charge. And
did she explain to you had the right to a jury trial?
I would assume. I know.
Did those words ever pass
your lips?
I think
they railroaded me personally,
you know,
but I mean.
You have a right to a jury trial on any of these marijuana offenses. And therefore, I would like to see a Santa Cruz jury convict you if you have these conditions. I don't think it would happen.
In a nutshell, they railroaded me into an under ounce charge because my friend's money is being held up. the $5,000 and the interest and everything else that goes with it. And if I dragged it out into a, it would have been dragged out for months.
Actually, you can get a trial within 45 days. They're required to try you or drop charges within 45 days. But go ahead.
I guess you learn something new every day.
That's true. If it's a misdemeanor felony, I think they got a slightly longer period. But so yeah, that's what's called. If you refuse to waive your time, if you insist on your right to a speedy trial, unlike the people in Guantanamo, unless you've been declared an enemy combatant, as some have by the Fuhrer, you are entitled to a trial within 45 days.
Then I asked the judge, I said, well, will I be on probation? I will not accept probation. I will not accept the police being in my life. I'll pay your fine, which came out to $370 total.
Who was the judge?
Judge Kelly, I think.
Ah, Kangaroo Kelly. Okay.
And I will not accept probation. I'll pay your fine. I won't accept. Oh, no. He says, you're not on probation. It'll be off your record in 2 years. And it's just a fine. It's just like driving without a license. Don't worry about it. And I had presented my medical marijuana card to the district attorney. And then they said, well, you didn't have a medical marijuana card when you got busted.
But you did have an oral doctor's recommendation.
Yes,
okay.
I did.
But nothing written.
I had it written, yeah, for my doctor.
So you did have it written
at the
time. I
have a separate letter from my doctor.
That predated the arrest?
No.
Well, that's the issue for them. Okay, and it's bullshit, but that's the issue for them. But you had a pre-written oral agreement, which, I guess if you'd referred them to your doctor, she or he might have said, he's talked to me about marijuana, and I've told him smoking it isn't so good, but tea bags are good, and that's why he does his tea stuff. Any case, you decided to cop a plea because you were afraid your friend was pressuring you for his 5Gs back, or you just felt you wanted to...
It's just, I don't like borrowing money.
Okay, so you wanted to get it back. Now, so then what happened? What happened subsequent to that?
Then I hadn't paid the fine yet. And then January 2nd rolls around, and I have a police officer banging on my door.
Actually, before January 2nd, you attended a Measure K meeting at my suggestion, didn't you?
Yes.
Measure K Commission. This is a commission meeting that met in the hearing, met as a hearing at City Council to hammer out its final report, sworn to by Minnie Goebbels' Zach Friend of the police department, who insisted that there had been, of all the 350-odd cases involving marijuana in the police department for the last year, not a single one of them fell under Measure K's concerns because either they weren't on private property, they involved someone under 21, or they involved another offense. But we had testimony from two people who were present and a third person, Craig Canada, who was not present, that there were at least three cases during that period that involved marijuana on private property, over the age of 21, with no other charge addressed, involving situations that were obviously not the lowest priority. Two police officers tracking you into the bookshop Santa Cruz, unless, as now may be the case, you're suggesting maybe there was some smoking that you were observed doing on public property.
It's a possibility.
Uh-huh. I mean, did they state that in the course of their discussion?
I'm not aware of it.
Yeah, it would seem that they would have, because that would be the probable cause. You see, they would say to you, we saw you smoking at such and such a place. So why did they say they were coming after you at all at the bathroom of the bookshop Santa Cruz? Is this some sort of... did they suspect you of being one of those vandals who are harassing the poor coonerties because of their militant stand in favor of the laws that protect our community against crazy campers who feel like they have to sleep at night? I've heard there's been some vandalism in the bookshop bathroom.
I think what they suspected was I was doing something in the bathroom.
They suspected you were doing something in the bathroom. Did they say that?
At first they kind of... I got the impression that they were insinuating such a thing, and then they said they weren't insinuating such a thing. And then while we were standing outside, a worker from inside bookshop Santa Cruz comes out and says, what's going on here? What did this guy do? And I don't think they told her anything, but then she's like... Oh, well, if there's any crime that was committed, we don't want him in here anymore.
So, in other words, even though this erstwhile employee, did you notice his or her name?
No.
Decided without a trial, without a charge.
Oh, and while they were putting me in the cop car.
You were going to be banned from the Bookshop Santa Cruz.
The community service officer said, you are not allowed inside Bookshop Santa Cruz anymore.
I see. Well, that sounds like a kind of the fair standard of judgment I've come to accept from the Coonerty regime. Both citywide and bookshop-wide, that's how it's looking to me. We're going to take a brief musical break. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm talking with Brian Parquette, who made a complaint to the Measure K Commission that all was not well in the state of Santa Cruz in terms of their following the law passed by the Santa Cruz voters, although hobbled because of a police department initiated lawsuit, well, actually initiated by the city of Santa Cruz under pressure from the police department, that removed the right of the Measure K Commission to examine the police records. I mean, now they just have to, you know, trust the police department and what records they choose to give, which, of course, it's not that the police will necessarily be mendacious or false in what they say, but if you can't oversee, what's the point of an oversight commission? Stay with us. We will continue.
To your break.
America is. America is. America is. America is.
Your phone, and you won't have a single atom left.
And that was, as you might have guessed, I Want to Destroy You by the Soft Boys. Another one from the Rock Mix of the RYI. That's Revolutionary Youth Institute. Informers. Ickies. Anyway, Revolutionary Youth. www.revolutionaryyouth if you're interested in that recording. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and the studio with me is Brian Parkett. We've been taking a rather slow look at his bust in the Bookshop Santa Cruz, well, right outside the bathroom, and the issue of Measure K's being involved became a rather serious one, seemingly ignored by or missed by the police department, which claimed that it has been spotless in having no measures, no arrests that might involve Measure K. So you talked about this issue before the Measure K Commission, and they actually said they were going to alter their final report, which has still not gone in yet. Their report was supposed to, they were supposed to be meeting 3 months after they were formed in November of 2006, but they ended up not meeting until September of 2007 because the police department, the police department and the city attorney moved to hobble their powers, but even before that, the city council refused to appoint members to their commission, and now we have a commission which is a very bad joke and meets every 6 months, and it's been, you know, roundly sabotaged, I believe, both by city attorney and by those who are supposed to be defending this. And I talk about the man who actually apparently tried to help you yourself, Brian, Ben Rice, an attorney who I in many ways have a lot of respect for, but really strongly disagree with on this issue, the Measure K Commission and its powers. But let's get back to your situation. You spoke before the Measure K Commission, and they actually were sufficiently, took your account sufficiently seriously that they asked that the whole report be modified because they had heard from the public that at least three people, you, Craig Canada, and Dennis Holt, a poet and a performer, a musician with SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, had in fact been stopped on private property. And in Holt's case, when they called four police officers, it was obviously not the lowest priority. You don't call four police officers for a lowest priority marijuana stop, particularly when it's possession. I mean, it's bullshit. But it's something that, you know, gives the police the pretext to, flex their muscles. That's my layman's interpretation of why they do this stupid stuff.
Based on rumors and rumors and rumors?
Based upon my, my experience with the police, my gut-level feelings, looking at one case after another. Admittedly, I'm not inside the police department hearing the candid confessions of police officers. So, that's true. Anyway, you live in Santa Cruz. You were homeless for about 10 years. Then you got a room in 2006.
Yeah, it was November 2006.
It was January 2nd of this year. Something happened to you as you were in your apartment, right?
10 o'clock in the morning, approximately. Bang, 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 bang on my door loudly. I've stumbled to the door. I think I'd just taken a crap or something. Stumbled to the door, looked through the peephole. I see this rather scary-looking, plain-clothed person behind the door. And he says that he's a police officer and that he wants me to open the door.
Did he show you ID?
No, I couldn't see any ID. Mm-hmm. I couldn't see any badges either.
What was your reaction?
I immediately called 911.
And what did you do then?
I asked 911. I said, there's somebody claiming to be a police officer on the other side of my door. What do they want?
Mm-hmm.
And 911 said, well, ask him.
Did they indicate that
they didn't know? They said, yes, he is a police officer. We had a call shortly before he's arrived. And
somebody called him to come.
No.
Well, they had a call. What do you mean? What did they mean by you had a call? They had a call.
They had a call from the police officer saying they were arriving at my address to make contact with me.
Oh, and they didn't say it wasn't that they were. Normally, they I don't know if the police normally call the 911 center. Normally, the citizenry calls the 911 center in order to get the police. So
if there was something going on, I wasn't aware of it.
Okay, so but the 911 center said the police had called the 911 center and
yeah, the undercover officer that was in front of my door.
Okay, so and so then what happened?
They said he was. I said, well, what does he want? And they said they didn't know and to ask him.
And you asked him?
So through the crack of the door, without opening the door, I kept it locked. I said, well, what do you want?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, don't make this make us harder on you. Don't make us embarrass you in front of your neighbors. Just open up.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, if you don't have a warrant. Oh, and I said, well, what do you want? You know, why? Through the crack of the door. I didn't open the door. I kept it locked.
Mm-hmm.
He said, we want to look for marijuana plants.
Ah, nice.
And I said, there's no marijuana plants here, and if you don't have a warrant, please go away.
And remember, you don't have to, and it's often best when you're... Anything you say to the police department that's a lie could conceivably be considered... Whether they say that or not. In other words, it's often best to say, make no statements. Again, I'm giving you something for the future and for the radio audience to think about.
Listen, I suspected that the complex I live in has been coming into my house without... prior knowledge.
Right. What I'm saying is, regardless of that suspicion, it may well be true, if a police officer comes to your door and says, you got marijuana plants in there, haven't you? You don't have to say, no, I don't. You can say, officer, whoever you are, go get a warrant and leave me alone. Goodbye. Because, you know, they have no right to enter your house without a warrant, unless they have evidence of a crime. And you certainly, you know, and for example, when the FBI comes, the standard suggestion is you don't talk to the FBI. Because if you make a false statement to the FBI, that's crime. And even if it isn't a false statement, if they can prove somehow that it is a false statement, then you're screwed. You get
such as this interview on this radio.
Well, we know that everything is said on this radio is true, and also being closely monitored by at least 17 government agencies. But it's neither here nor there. I get my paycheck and go home. You know what I mean, Brian?
I understand. I get my paycheck.
I appreciate it. So anyway, what was this guy's response after you told him? You know, you got a warrant, and what happened then?
He left.
He left. So I know that I then called up, you told me about this, and I got your permission to contact the chair and the vice chair of the Measure K Commission, because I suggested this might be police retaliation for your public testimony about the incident in the bookshop Santa Cruz. And then apparently, did either of them contact you to talk to you about this issue? Did anybody from the Measure K Commission talk to you?
I was just recently contacted by Eric Rice.
Oh, you mean Ben Rice?
Ben Rice.
Eric Rice is the vice chair of the commission. So maybe you mean him and not Ben Rice when you were talking to him.
I think I mean Eric Rice. I think his name is Eric Rice.
Yeah, Eric Rice is the vice chair of the commission. Ben Rice is an attorney who came before the commission and who actually was who supported folks. You were then, let's see, what happened then? So after that, you got...
after the January 2nd cop at my door?
Right. You were contacted by the vice chair of the commission. You told him your story, and I actually got a rather, frankly, not particularly encouraging email from him. He's the guy who doesn't want to put through a Public Records Act request to find out what's been going on with your case or anybody else's case. He wants the city council to weigh in on the whole issue first. The city council has been putting off any kind of discussion of it, and so has Tina Scholl, apparently not been finished. She's a staff person who handles the commission's paperwork, and they haven't finished the report. It's all being delayed down the road. Then something else happened to you yesterday. You had the third of three different kinds of inspections from your landlord.
First, I get the Section 8 inspection in November.
Right.
And then I came in and everything was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get a fire inspection. And now I get a maintenance inspection.
So each month is a different kind of inspection.
Yeah, of course.
And so this last time, I know you were rather upset by the inspector because of what? This was day before yesterday or the day before, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, the manager and the maintenance guy, the head maintenance guy showed up as for the note that they left on my door 2 days prior saying they were going to between 1 and 3. The manager of the complex and the head maintenance guy came to my door. I opened it up. I let them in. And they immediately just started rifling through my things.
Now, you have the right to grow your own marijuana as a patient, correct?
Well, according to the police I talked to yesterday, they said that you technically have to have a special permit.
To grow your own marijuana.
To grow your own marijuana. And there's no marijuana growing in my house.
Right.
Just a rather sophisticated setup that sits unused.
Okay.
So which you're I want to use for tomatoes and bell peppers.
And you might even one day want to grow, you might want to grow marijuana.
You know, it's kind of a, I've noticed, you see, I just knew this was going to happen. I just knew. That's why I didn't start growing anything, is that they would turn it into some ridiculous, as we see happening.
Well, what happened when this inspector came in was you became upset.
Inspector? He's the head maintenance guy in the complex.
The head maintenance guy. So he doesn't have any official city position. He's just the maintenance guy. And what was he looking for? Some kind of violations or?
He was looking for marijuana.
Right. Did he say that?
Well, he gets inside my tent.
Your tent?
My tent.
What explain this to people. What are you talking about?
It's one of my many containment systems that I have.
And had you been a marijuana grower, you would have needed that kind of operation indoors.
It's a hobby.
It's a hobby,
I'm obsessed with the technology.
Right. We can wink and nod at each other. As far as I'm concerned, it's not only completely innocent, it's beneficial, and it's nobody's business. The fact of the matter is, it seems like they were trying. I know you sent me a video because at some point you began videoing this guy going through your apartment and telling him, you told him finally, okay, I want you to leave.
About 25 times or something?
And you repeated it rather firmly.
I think it came out to 2.5 minutes of...
And he ignored you.
For 2.5 minutes, yeah.
And finally...
The manager was like, come on. I mean...
To him, to leave.
Yeah, she kept saying, all right, fine. He wants us out of here. Come on, let's go. And the guy would not stop. Not only would he not stop, he started photographing everything. And he started putting his hands where they shouldn't be.
You actually have a videotape of this.
Yes.
In fact, I've seen that videotape. And it will be played on Channel 4 later tonight, of course. No, just kidding. Just kidding.
I don't know what to say. My life is already in danger.
Now, something happened at 5 o'clock this morning that prompted you to give me a call.
5:30 this morning.
What happened?
A brick was thrown through my window.
A brick?
A brick.
A brick or half a brick?
A half a brick.
And it wasn't a brick of marijuana. It was an ordinary
garden variety brick. Yeah, it would have been nice if it was a brick of marijuana.
Okay.
But, obviously, yesterday was this shindig inspection that gone bad which basically turned into a home invasion, essentially. After the third time I told him to leave, it turned into a home invasion.
Did you file a charge of him through the police department?
You know, when the police department showed up, my blood pressure was so out of control, and I was so, disturbed by the situation and scared. You know, they came up to the door, I let them in.
And this was yesterday, or
this was yesterday.
Okay, because you called the police.
The 30th,
and you asked them.
No, they called the police. They came to do their inspection. I told them to get out of my house after they started. They touched my MSR stove.
What is an MSR stove?
It's a mountain safety research camping stove that I had on my. Mm-hmm. I had it on my stove, and underneath a metal plate, it was all safe and everything.
Mm-hmm. And so finally, after you told them to leave. And finally, the manager persuaded the maintenance guy to leave. They had called the police, and the police came to your door.
Yeah.
How many officers?
Three.
Three officers. And did you let them in?
Yes.
You did let them in.
Yes.
So they actually did get into your department. This success at last for the police department.
Yes.
Did they search your apartment?
Yes.
The police searched your apartment.
They were very respectful, and they were very. See, you know. Things have been so bad that it's like for them to even be nice was just unbelievable to me. And they were respectful.
First they soften you up by treating you like shit, and then they come in and say, oh, gee, how can we help you out?
I tried to tell them what was going on, yeah. But it's like I kept telling them, this guy, you know, I suspect that he's been rifling through my stuff while I'm gone. And, you know, he wouldn't leave my house.
You know, the next time this happens...
And while they were there, I was uploading the video, of course.
Right. Well, let me ask...
Because of the fear of the data being compromised by this person that's going through my house.
So, I mean, the next time you invite three police officers over to take a report, lock your door, walk outside, and make your report outside, please, to the police. Say to them, here's the situation, this man, and there's witnesses, and I have a film of it. I'll give you a copy of the film as soon as it's ready. You know, he refused to leave the apartment repeatedly. And he continued to molest my property, and there may be some damage. I'll report the damage report later. But I want this, you know, I'm making a formal citizen's arrest of this guy for home invasion. and the police can do whatever they want with it, but at least you made the report. In fact, you can still do that. Did the police eventually take it? Did they give the guy a citation?
I informed them this morning when they showed up after the brick was thrown through my window and I was showered in glass.
And that was after...
And I have cuts all over
me. But before we get out to the brick, which I think is even more serious, did the police take your report yesterday of the home invasion?
And yes.
Did they issue the man a citation to appear in court?
No.
They did not.
I saw him. He was working today.
Well, he could work today, but you would know that if he's been told he has to go to court to answer charges, potentially, that hasn't happened.
No.
The name of the man?
In order to keep this situation from spiraling further out of control, I think we should just, like...
You have a right to not answer any questions, whether it's a police officer or a talk show host. You know that.
Yeah, I don't want this situation.
The brick situation.
In the interest of peace.
The next morning, I happen to think, though, that if you've already talked about this far, you should give the guy's name and also names of every officer involved in this case, frankly.
I can't remember who the officer
was. Right, the more information you give, the better, and I think the more protected you are. But, again, I'm not the person who got a brick through the window this morning at 5:30. So half a brick came through your window. You were shattered with glass. What'd you do then?
Called the police.
No, you, before that, did you look outside, jump up and say, hey, motherfucker?
I was actually hiding on the ground thinking that I was being sprayed by bullets.
So you were, but you did in fact.
And I got on the phone and I called 911.
And then the police came?
Yes.
And three officers came.
Three
officers came the day before in response to your landlord's call or the maintenance call.
Yes.
These two officers, same as the other officers or different officers?
Different officers.
And they, what did they do?
They offered to take me to the hospital if I needed to. They asked me what happened, and I told them, I think it's this person, and this is what happened yesterday. And I showed them the video, but I think my audio went out, and I showed them what the person looked like. And that I suspect since what happened the previous day, I think that this person's involved.
And it also made you, put you in a position where you made a decision about changing your lodging?
Immediately, yeah. I'm not only scared, I'm, you know, it's like I can't live in that kind of a situation. I can't live where people hate me. And these people live in the community. They live in the complex. They work there.
What is the complex?
And they've got it in for me, and I just don't want to deal with that.
You want to say the name of the complex? You don't have to.
It's a matter of record on the internet. It's Pacific Shores.
Pacific Shores. Where is it?
On Schaefer Road.
On Schaefer Road. How many people live there?
I think 230.
Mostly low income or mostly?
No, it's like 20% low income.
You think you're suffering any discrimination because of your low income status?
I definitely think that they just don't like Section 8ers and that's how they treat them.
Have you had any solidarity from other people? Have you made any friends in the complex who are, let's say, Section 8ers? And have you talked to them about this situation?
Not really yet, no.
Yeah, it might be nice to get some solidarity. I mean, I suggested you contact, you know, medical marijuana organizations to talk about this and other tenant rights organizations.
You know, I'm just to the point where I can't deal with violence. Right. I can't handle it. I got post-traumatic stress disorder. I've dealt with violence all my life. I just can't deal with it. I got to get out of there.
So now you're planning to become homeless again, pack your stuff and
I'd rather sleep on the sidewalk than deal with this kind of a situation. At least the sidewalk I can change every day.
Anybody has any thoughts on this, listeners out there, give a call, 427-3772, 427-FRSC. We're talking to Brian Parquette, and you're tuned to Free Radio at 101.1 FM, freakradio.org.
In 1649, to St. George's Hill, a ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the people's will. They defied the landlords, they defied the laws. They were the dispossessed, reclaiming what was theirs. We come in peace, they said, to dig and sow. We come to work the lands in common and to make the waste grounds grow. This earth divided, we will make whole. So it will be a common treasury for all. The sin of property we do disdain. No man has any right to buy and sell the earth for private gain. By theft and murder they took the land.
Now everywhere the walls spring up at their command. They make the laws to chain us well. The clergy dazzle us with heaven, or they damn us into hell. We will not worship the God they serve, the God of greed who feeds the rich while poor men starve. We work, we eat together, we need no swords. We will not bow to the masters or pay rent to the lords. We are free men, though we are poor. You dig us all, stand up for glory, stand up now. Men of property, the orders came. They sent the hired men and troopers to wipe out the diggers' claim, tear down their cottages, destroy their corn. They were dispersed, but still the vision lingers on. You poor take courage, you rich take care. This earth was made a common treasury for everyone to share. All things in common, all people one. We come in peace, the orders came to cut them down.
And that was The World Turned Upside Down by Billy Bragg. And as I mentioned before, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz. And again, the call-in number in case folks have got some stories of their own to tell about problems with the police or medical marijuana, pro and con in terms of your own local experiences. The number is 427-3772. And we have about an hour left in the show, and I'm going to turn now to another local issue that's been concerning a lot of us, the police actions against the drum circle at the farmers market on Wednesday. And that is something we've been fighting to restore, to get our public space back, in essence, which is happening every Wednesday. There's a new law in town, which those of you listening regularly to the show know a lot about already. It's called the Parking Lot and Garages Trespass Law. I call it the Parking Lot Panic Law because it has to do with a kind of a paranoid reaction by merchants, or even you might say a deliberate imposition of privilege and prestige to get rid of people in parking lots and garages that the merchants and the police and the staff of the city think don't even deserve the right to be there, even if they're doing absolutely nothing wrong whatsoever. It'll become wrong to just be there, and it now is wrong to be there if you're not parking a vehicle or retrieving a vehicle from the parking lot. And if you are, you only have 15 minutes, so don't sit in your car and read a book. That's illegal. It's illegal to do it for less than 15 minutes unless you're actually in the act of retrieving or parking a vehicle, such as my reading of this absurd law. So the police have moved in the last month on drummers who do a drum circle every Wednesday afternoon next to the farmer's market in the lot adjacent to the farmer's market. To clarify, the farmer's market leases half the lot for its own commercial activities, and the other half of the lot is a parking lot which drummers traditionally come to and drum at, not blocking traffic, not moving out cars, not harassing people, not even making a hell of a lot of noise considering their location. They're pretty distant from any residence or business. I mean, some of the merchants in the farmer's market get a little tired of the drumming. That's certainly true. But it happens once a week for 2 or 3 hours. It's kind of a community celebration. And you can actually follow a lot of the story and discussion of this particular whole saga on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Indie Media. That's indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. The police have on at least three past Wednesdays in the last month and a half driven away the drummers with threats that they will get citations. I think it's $225 something for a ticket. I'm not quite clear about the actual amount. But the drummers are scared. They left. And in response, a group called the Trash Orchestra, which is a group that plays percussion instruments that they make at home out of interesting things, like hubcaps and such, after rehearsing illegally in another parking lot for 2 or 3 hours on a Sunday afternoon, marched on over to the farmer's market and began playing and saying, in essence, to the police, good, give us tickets. We'll see how the community likes this kind of behavior on your part, what they say about that. And the police backed off on at least two occasions when the trash orchestra showed up to bolster the farmer's market, I should say the drum circle there. Well, last week, Wednesday, a week ago, the trash orchestra was there. The police, Officer Klein, did come in and seize one woman, Mary, for drunk in public, although she was, I would say she was intoxicated, but she wasn't so intoxicated she couldn't take care of herself, and I don't think it was a legitimate arrest for that. She had an open container, but they didn't arrest her for that, and it was a provocative arrest, considering the fact that the crowd was concerned that the police were absurdly enforcing laws that were essentially designed to eliminate public assemblies in parking lots, and that some people feel very sensitive about that. I mean, after all, we have a constitution. A number of people, admittedly, rich white Englishmen mostly, and I guess some Germans and Dutch, fought a revolution 250, 300 years ago, actually in 1776, to kick out foreign oppressors who were quartering troops on their territory, denying them the right of public assembly, all this sort of thing. And we established a constitution, or I should say people who lived here before we did establish a constitution. It isn't very well respected. In the course of the last 200 years, we've seen various groups genocided and all kinds of oppression remains. But the fact of the matter is the principles involved still get some people pretty exercised. They like those principles, the right to freedom of speech, the right to freedom of the press, the right to freedom of assembly, the right to a jury trial by your peers, the right to be free from cruel and unusual punishment. All these rights are things which I think a lot of people in this community, maybe because they've been reading too many textbooks when they were kids or whatever, they have some belief in. At least I know I do. I'm one of those people. Anyway, I did some videoing, and the videoing I did has been boiled down and is now available on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. If you go online, I'm going to check it out to be sure I'm not just whistling Dixie here. Let's see what we got here. It's a story I just wrote. Peaceful parking lot percussionists pounce on police peeper. And that's... Well, you're going to hear some tape about that happened, some audio tape, which actually is a little different than the videotape. The videotape is relatively short. It's been boiled down to manageable form. Thank you, Tenderfoot Tim Rumford of www.humanityforhomeless.blogspot.com. Thank you very much. Tim is a great editor. He puts on titles. He makes sense out of my raw footage, and it's pretty raw. This is the second time I've used a video camera. So if you want to read about it, check out my story online, and you can see it there. And I'm going to play some audio now. And we still have in the studio with us Dennis. Dennis is coming up actually at 8 o'clock. He won't be in the studio for a little while. But we have a friend of Dennis waiting here for him. Maybe Dennis can call in and chat with him. Who knows? And we have Brian here in the studio as well, who is still hanging out, trying to avoid... having another brick thrown through another window or some other act of hostility and a destruction against him for who knows what. Is it medical marijuana? Is it the fact that he has these cool shades? I don't know. It could be his curly hair. Hard to tell. Anyway, let's get back to the drum circle and the farmer's market. Here's some tape I took from that incident. If you want to call in and comment at any point, perhaps you were there, perhaps you weren't there and have some ideas and opinions, please do. 427-3772 is the call-in number.
2008, about 3:05 in the parking lot number 4, which is the parking lot next to the farmer's market. The big clouds, but bright sunshine, both. Who knows what's going to happen? We have about a dozen people assembled. Suzanne with her drum and Brent with his big drum. Here's a man with a bike. Sir, you have 13 and a half minutes to park your bike and be on your way. What's your name?
No, I got all day to park my bike. I just got to be on my way in 13. No, I got 15 minutes once the cop gets here.
I see. So your name, sir, is?
Jack the Ripper.
Well, you're not ripped, but you certainly maybe have to jack
you. I didn't get ripped.
I believe it. Anyway, we have a number of items here. We have doggies. We have signs that have been put up here, actually. Displays often seen in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz in protest times. ACLU statements against the parking lot panic law, as I call it. And here comes Food Not Bombs. All right. Food Not Bombsters have arrived. And I'm alternating doing audio and video, so those of you who see the video of those parts that actually appear on the IndieBay.org, which is where this will probably be posted, as well as humanityforhomeless.blogspot.com, can keep an eye on what's happening and keep an ear on what's happening, both. We're talking with a man who's a real old-timer, and I don't know how old-timer this woman is. What's your name?
My name's Lynn.
And you are?
Felipe.
And Felipe, you were, of course, one of the notorious survivors of the Scotts Creek Bluff mass arrest back in December of 1977.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we had the good fortune of being standing up for our rights as human beings to live on this planet. We're involved right now at this time with the longest walk, 30-year commemoration of the longest walk the American Indian Movement put on 30 years ago. And it starts February the 11th from San Francisco, headed to Washington, D.C., arriving June the 20th. Mm-hmm. To anybody involved, you can look it up on the internet. It's longestwalk.org or myspace.com/supportkitchen, and you'll get a lot of information off there if you're interested. Anybody that'd like to donate, or you can get all that information off the internet.
Now, you were a resident of Santa Cruz who lived in a vehicle 34 years ago.
I don't know about 31
years ago. 41 years ago.
31.
Well, yeah. Well, anyway, since then I've met a wonderful woman, have children, and we're
You've abandoned your vagabond life.
No, we haven't. The babies were born in buses and places like that.
You continue just violating the standards of our society. Well, you're back here and recognize this man, too. Your name, sir, two names.
Joaquin.
And Joaquin, you're showing me the longest walk, too. All life is sacred. But your photo is not on it. Why is that?
It will be on the, if you look up.
Because it's not all about him.
No, it's not all about me. It's about all life is sacred. See,
what do you think about this situation? Here, let me return you. I know we've talked a little bit, about the longest walk. People can check out that whole website you mentioned. But what about the situation here where we're waiting to see if the drummers will be able to drum unmolested? Do you remember drummers drumming back in the 70s here?
Yes, I sure do. Yes, sure do.
Were they driven out of this parking lot then?
I don't know about this parking lot, but we had a lot of law enforcement interference with entertainment and people just having fun, enjoying life, celebrating life. There seems to be some kind of energy here in Santa Cruz. I haven't been here for some time, and I see there's a lot of homeless that aren't being taken care of. That's a shame. You know, all the energy around here in Santa Cruz, the people that have so much, and there's people here that have so little also. So this walk is consists. I'm talking about this walk again because it's about mankind, about compassion, about forgiveness. It's appealing the earth of alcoholism, diabetes, and anything affecting human beings from getting along together in harmony.
Sounds good to me. How many folks are going to be doing it?
Well, we start out with 200 folks walking 25 miles a day.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be a break every 6 days. We have a day of rest every 6 days.
You'll be sleeping illegally in violation of the camping laws.
If that's what's supposed to happen, I guess we will.
Shocking. Now, remind us of what happened to you when you were arrested back in the 70s here, along with, 30 other people or more, the Scotts Creek Bluff people?
Well, we was living out there on a bluff, and the law enforcement would come at night and harass mostly the women. You know, we had sisters there that, in fact, there was a baby born out there, and We was incarcerated. They impounded our vehicles. We went to jail. We got out on OR, and the next day we went in front of the courthouse and protested. We had signs that said, if you're poor in Santa Cruz County, you're illegal. So we went to jail again, and we went to trial. And, of course, we wasn't able to go back to Scott Creek, but there was a lot of lessons learned here about the rich people here in Santa Cruz. They don't care about, they don't have compassion for the folks who are less fortunate.
Well, I know that you won that trial. It was the largest misdemeanor trial in Santa Cruz history, I remember. And it had to do with people in vehicles being driven out of town and finally kind of getting together in a makeshift community.
on land that was actually private, and it was unclear whether they had the permission of the owner or the owner's agent, but the deputies moved in, confiscated your vehicles, and then you guys occupied the basement of the county building, right?
Yes, we did. We sat into the county building. We was there till they closed up, and they started surrounding us, putting gloves on. There was a gentleman who stepped forward, Greg Grunike, which came to our rescue. We didn't know him from Adam, but he came through. He said, I'm going to represent these people, and he was with us all the way through. We had benefits at the Union Hall. I believe Utah Phillips came, was part of the people that entered, the entertainer that came, and he used to be a Wobbly, which I don't know if a lot of people aren't aware what a Wobbly was. Years ago,
IWW,
and he was what you call a living legend that used to play. There was a gentleman also that played the saw in front of the St. George that came and accompanied us.
Tom Schreiner. So anyway, Tom Scribner, right.
And
his statue is now sitting in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, where the main worker there was Ryan Coonerty, who gave us this latest law that says what we're doing right now is illegal. We're not allowed to talk in a parking lot. We should be on the sidewalk talking. You can't be here except to retrieve or pick up your vehicle.
I think that relates a lot to the law, the administration under the Security Act that President Bush passed, making people more paranoid so they won't talk to each other because they're in fear. But we're here to change that. We're here to create peace on earth. We're here to understand that we're all here together and that we should be sharing things with each other and celebrating life.
Here, here. We've been talking with... Your name again, sir?
Felipe Chavez.
Thank you, Felipe. And, of course...
Amen.
Thank you. It's about 3:25. All seems well and clear. One man with a guitar and one woman with a drum and an a cappella singer, Donnie, singing and drinking or swigging his juice. And Food Now Bombs feeding. No apparent police surveillance. No Officer Aldrich parked in a car prominently over near Logos, as was the case the last couple of weeks. And a few old-timers keeping an eye on things. And other folks clustered around a tree off to the side. We're talking with a woman who doesn't want to be on video, but who is working on a cop watch. Amber, what's the story of the cop watch? You spoke about this on Free Radio about a month ago. You helped put together or be a part of a cop watch in Los Angeles. And here you are again at this questionable event, hopefully not to watch cops, but to enjoy the festivities. But who knows what's going to happen? You have a camera, right?
Yes.
You're going to go get that camera.
Yes, eventually, if I can make it down there in time.
Yeah, is this up on campus? Or where?
No, I live on Ocean.
You should be able to possibly snatch your camera and come back. Yeah, usually there's a drum circle that begins about this time, and there's not too many drummers, but there may be a little apprehension. In fact, we see a man arriving, Yon Golder, who's got a revolutionary flag he's going to display here. What should people do who want to get involved with the Cop Watch project?
Well, they should email me at risingwind@riseup.net, or else they should study it themselves. You can find a lot of information about Cop Watch organization in general online, and some packets and pamphlets to start you out. You can just start your own Cop Watch, get a camera, and do it. Or else contact me, and we can talk about it further.
Thanks, Amber.
You're welcome.
So we're talking with...
But it should be mentioned, unfortunately, that Amber has not really seen fit to make her last two or three appointments here, and so I don't know whether, in fact, she's that serious about it. I hope she is. And if you're interested, leave a message on the Huff line, and I'll try to press it on to her, or pass it on to her. And that the Huff line is 423-4833, and Huff is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is the homeless civil rights organization that generally meets Wednesdays in the morning, but... We got sicked out. A lot of people got the flu last Wednesday. So if you were trying to make it to a Huff meeting on Wednesday, there wasn't a Huff meeting on Wednesday. But usually there is, and there's also a human rights organization meeting on Saturday. Wednesday in the basement of the county building, 9:30 in the morning to 11:30. Check it out at 701 Ocean Street. Hot coffee or tea or whatever is provided. And human rights organization meets every Saturday at the Firefly at 131 Front Street, where you can also have a cup of hot coffee. And we're working there pretty steadily on the sleeping band lawsuit, which I may be playing some tape on after this drum circle audio is finished. And again, there's some really interesting dialogue on the issue of public spaces. And the real issue for the community is whether we're going to allow the police department and the conservative city groups to essentially terrorize people away from the use of public spaces. I mean, the drum circle is a really outrageous example, but there are hundreds of other people who are being impacted by this law. And they're so well, we're so well conditioned that we just sort of think, oh, well, we got to, you know, grin and bear it because we don't want to violate the law and subject ourselves to the inconvenience of a fine and the embarrassment of a police contact and so forth. But I frankly make it a habit to walk through parking lots and hang out there whenever I can, because I think the whole thing is not only ridiculous but subversive of basic constitutional rights. And I think that the community needs to address it by reasserting those constitutional rights. And that's what the drum circle is doing. And the police department knows it. I mean, you're going to hear more about what the police department did do on this Wednesday, either if you go to the indybay.org/Santa Cruz website, or you can read the stories, the brief stories about what happened, and somewhat longer stories as well, and see some video. Or just listen on to this audio tape to hear more.
Teresa.
And Teresa, you're in a wheelchair, and what are you eating there?
I'm eating a pina colada and wild berry smoothie.
Do you have a car or a vehicle in this parking lot?
No, I do not.
So you're actually violating the parking lot panic law. You realize that?
Why?
Well, because you're not allowed to be in a parking lot unless you have a car or bicycle or going directly through. And even then, only for 15 minutes as you retrieve or park your car or bicycle.
You get to do it for half an hour, Robert.
So,
good point.
Half an hour is what you have.
If you're
retrieving a car or bicycle, which you're not, so therefore you're a major criminal.
And she has half an hour because she presumably, well, actually, it being disabled is not enough. You have to have a disabled plaque. So that means if you're disabled but you don't have a bicycle or a car, and apparently a wheelchair is not enough, and even a wheelchair, you got to have an actual plaque. Even I guess a wheelchair even with a plaque would not be enough. You would have to have a car or bicycle with a plaque because, see, the only possible legitimate reason you could have to be in any of the 10 square blocks or more that make up the Santa Cruz City's parking garages and lots, and there are four garages, multi-story garages, and about 15 to 20 lots, little pieces of parcels of land throughout the downtown that are used as parking lots and used for a variety of purposes other than parking vehicles. I mean, and people in the process of parking vehicles or just after parking their vehicles hang out in their cars, particularly people who are homeless. Like, for example, Brian Parquette is about to be. Brian, you're going to be living in a vehicle, aren't you?
Well, I don't have a vehicle right now. I have two scooters.
You're going to be we can put up an umbrella on the rain between your two scooters. What's your plan?
I want to sell everything is what my plan is.
Sell. Sounds like the stock market, you know.
I want to get rid of a bunch of dead weight to me. Well, one of them's a 250 reflex scooter.
Well, the issue though is you've lived outside before. We're not going to give you an opportunity to vend your merchandise on this way, our non-commercial station. But you lived outdoors for 10 years. How did you fare then? Did you go squat in buildings? Did you have a campsite on the Poganip? Were you, did you kick down money to Mayor Rotkin when he was around? Let him sleep in one of the offices. What happened there? I mean, how did you survive?
One time I got busted squatting in an abandoned bank.
Right, but I mean, generally speaking, were you outdoors, indoors?
Outdoors.
And you were sleeping in violation of the sleeping ban?
Yes.
Or did you regulate yourself so that you were lawful and you slept only before 11 o'clock at night and after 8:30 in the morning?
The first couple of years I got busted for I think I got two or three tickets at one of your, I remember the original sleeping ban camp out at City Hall.
There were a number of them, and actually you're probably thinking of the City Hall Sleepers protest in 1996. Perhaps.
Yep, I was there.
Yeah, that was the one run by Dragon's Heart, Dan Hopkins, Shit Kicker Sean Alimi, and a couple of other guys.
I remember Sean Alimi.
Yeah, Sean Alimi had a group called Feed the People, and he fed
the people.
He died
in an accident.
He was killed in a car crash with John Earth, as he drove in the Central Valley. It was really...
I remember that, man. They cooked at the homeless gardens over on Schaefer Road, where I live.
But anyway, you're going to be outside again, outside in the rain, and you're being driven out because, essentially, you're a medical marijuana user, it sounds like, and the police...
If you want my personal opinion, I think I've lost my spiritual path.
So you blame yourself.
I blame myself for allowing people like that, to allowing myself to live in a situation like that.
Even for 2 years in this particular housing on Schaefer Road?
Or? A year and 2 months or a year and a month.
Really? Well, you know, housing is kind of hard to find, and Section 8 is kind of hard to find too, Brian.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, this whole Section 8 thing, it's just...
Anybody out there had Section 8 problems they want to talk about, or how the plight of people at Section 8 here in Santa Cruz? Love to hear about it. 427-3772. I mean, I am playing this tape about the drum circle, and I am concerned about new strategies for next week when we're going to be coming back again. Those of us who want to make sure that the rights of one group of people, at least the drum circle people and the Food Not Bombs folks and those who like to dance and enjoy the music or even just socialize in this parking lot, are respected by the police. Or if they don't want to respect it, then they understand they have a large number of people they're going to have to process and address through the legal system if they really want to do that. That is at least what some of us are thinking of doing. Others have more creative strategies. And if you're interested in any of this, give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, because a lot of this is directed against homeless people. And since you're voluntarily becoming homeless again, Brian, you're joining the multitude. What can I say?
It's better to be free than it is to be trounced upon.
Homeless by choice. Well, you might find a couple of bricks thrown your way even when you're outside, although...
Actually, when I was homeless, I never had to deal with half the violence I've had to deal with in the last year, as far as I'm concerned.
There are other instances of violence you wish to talk about, or...
Yeah, it's just, you know, people coming into your house and trouncing through your personal effects is just...
We have a caller. Let's maybe one of these burglars is on the phone to apologize. We'll see. Hi, you're on the phone with Brian and Robert.
Yeah, interesting show, and I like hearing Brian's comments. I just want to throw out a question that may be obvious or not obvious.
What's your name, caller?
Not Jack the Ripper.
All right, not Jack. What's your question or comment?
Whether or not, in your opinion, or statistically, if you have that info, has Measure K proven to include homeless people in their lowest priority, or does it seem to be more arrests of homeless people?
Are you asking me, or are you asking Brian, or are you asking us both? I guess you're probably just asking the question, huh?
Yeah, well, it just seems like the only people that are getting really harassed happen to be homeless.
Well, it's interesting. The people, you know, first of all, we don't get any stats from the police department that are clear in terms of the right to look at the records. I mean, they give us stats. They claim that they've had 350-odd marijuana arrests in the last year, but that none of them are meet Measure K criteria, so they aren't really subject to examination by the Measure K Commission. That should be a matter of the Measure K Commission to decide, not for the police department, in my view. But the police department is very jealous of its statistics, even though you would think that we have the right to look at those records because the Citizens Police Review Board, before it was destroyed by the Rutkin-Matthews City Council, certainly had that right. And so the claim that the city attorney makes that somehow it's a violation of the city charter to give the Measure K Commission the power to look at these matters is, frankly... I've never quite understood how it has any validity whatsoever, and I wasn't persuaded when I heard Ben Rice try to defend it, or Alan Wolf of the ACLU, locally, Drug Policy Project of the ACLU. So we don't have the records, is my first answer. The second thing is, well, it's interesting. At least two of the complaints did come from homeless people. One of them was Craig Canada, and the other was Dennis Holt. And it was, interestingly enough, on private property. We would think mostly homeless people don't sleep on private property. They're out there on the Poganip, or they're under the bridges, or they're in their vehicles parked on public property somewhere. But there are a number of homeless people who either, you know, who also use private property. And, for example, when you're in back of the stores, as, for example, Swami was when police went after him for, you know, having marijuana. Several police officers were going after him, and they're trying to keep me at bay with my tape recorder. Strom is a very nice guy to the police, too nice as far as I'm concerned.
Did he make a complaint to the Measure K?
I don't think he did, but I think it would have been appropriate for him to make a complaint, although it's not, I'm not entirely clear. It was in the area behind the buildings on Pacific Avenue, which I don't think is public property. I think it's privately leased.
Where again was Brian cited first?
He was in the bookshop Santa Cruz, Brian, I believe. And
he was actually taken to jail on Front Street.
But you were coming out of the bookshop Santa Cruz when the police contacted you, right?
Yeah.
In other words, you weren't on the street when they contacted you.
No, I was inside the... I came out of the bathroom, went in there for like, I don't know, a minute.
Right.
So
the answer to your question is I don't know, actually. I just know that whatever the situation, the police are not being responsive. But even worse, the community, frankly, doesn't seem to care much about this issue or is too occupied with earning a living, having enough money to pay the rent, getting out of their house before all their windows get broken. You know, all these issues which seem to be coming up, which are more important than standing up, making a principled stand around, you know, the right to use marijuana.
Major K is a little bit lacking in its validity or in its effectiveness.
Oh, for sure. But, I mean, you know, you want to use what tools you have and try to use them. And we can't, I mean, I can't get a return call from Anita Henry of the Measure K Commission, although she is sending me emails recently.
I got a question. Is horticultural equipment against the law?
I'm not aware that horticultural equipment is against the law. I know it depends on what laws you're talking about. The feds will claim that anything used to grow marijuana, presumably, has some illegal aspect to it. State authorities will claim if you're using it to grow recreational marijuana, it's against the law.
If there's marijuana being grown, what if I have it
right.
growing
again,
anything?
Again, the answer to that, I mean, you ask me as though, and I can't answer as though I knew. I don't know.
Okay, thank you. I'll go now.
All right, thanks, caller. And, hey, an actual phone call. Let's try again, all you callers out there. You're doing good. 427-3772. We have the master drug kingpin of Santa Cruz here in the studio.
Public
to answer
enemy number one.
All your questions. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Brian. Who's calling?
It's Bob.
Bob, have you been smoking again, Bob? I want to know, are you high? What's the deal here, man? And I assure you, the police will not invade your home because it will be a violation of Measure K.
Are you a member of the Purple Cushberry people?
No. Be quiet about the Purple Cushberry. Go ahead, Bob. You got a question.
The Office of Drug Control Policy, are you aware of that?
Oh, yeah. That's a fictional office created by the Rotkin Council in 2005.
It's a White House
Oh, I'm thinking of something else.
And they put out some interesting propaganda that will appear on local radio stations.
Oh, okay.
Among other things that they do.
I thought you were talking about the Office of Compassionate Use, which was created by the Santa Cruz City Council supposedly to, you know, grow marijuana for people who need marijuana, which has been delayed until such time as marijuana becomes legal across the country. A brilliant, pointless measure by Rotkin and company.
A little off, but what about the fact that people perceive that they're threatened by loitering?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Do you agree that people in Santa Cruz perceive a threat?
Some people do, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, some people perceive a threat from black people hanging out in numbers greater than 2.5. That's also true.
It's a good comeback.
You know,
but
I perceived a threat a moment ago when a guy came in the studio who is Hispanic in appearance and who didn't have any real business here. But, you know, my racism jumped into high gear. I was starting to think, who is this man? You know, and instead of, you know, just relaxing and noticing.
Well, to contrast the umbrella guy with other people that hang out on Pacific Avenue, the umbrella guy is pious and subdued.
Somebody like, well,
he might be a distraction, but he doesn't threaten.
The slow guy, the slow
automaton man.
He doesn't threaten.
Well,
isn't that why these laws have been enacted, including the sleeping ban, Robert?
Well, I think that certainly there's an element of that, sure. But I think that what's the point? I mean, you know, a lot of people regard free speech as threatening. That doesn't mean we eliminate the First Amendment of the Constitution. Why even consider it as a legitimate argument? It's not. It's an illegitimate argument. I mean, people have prejudice, so they act in certain ways, but that doesn't mean we should have any respect for that kind of prejudice, should we?
I think that's the basis of civil control law.
Prejudice is the basis of civil control.
The perceived threats are what establishes boundaries in public places.
I think real threats are what we need to concern ourselves, and perceived threats.
There are things you can't do. Can you walk around with a gun openly?
In Texas, you can.
In Texas,
yeah.
Okay. So there's a control right there. You can't walk around flashing a six shooter in Santa Cruz.
Well, you could. The Black Panthers could in the '60s, and they were perceived as a threat. But the fact of the matter is, guns are.
You don't think that this is the main motivator, for example, behind the parking lot?
Well, I think a gun.
15-minute law.
I think a gun is a threat, frankly, and that's a little different. I mean, walking around with an open book in the parking lot for 16 minutes is not a threat.
What is the technical term that's replaced loitering now? Loitering is no longer
trespass, I suppose.
Is that what it is?
Well, I don't know. They call it the parking lot trespass law.
Yeah, every business has a easement that says that if they don't want you around,
right? They can.
Okay, it's part of property rights. Okay, and it's some kind of a perceived threat that you're going to do something. You're going to smash their windows. You're going to accost somebody.
Well, that's merchants have the belief that people who look poor are a threat, and part of that's, I think, a guilty conscience, and part of that is a fear of getting into that condition, and a part of that is who knows what else. But the reality is, we have a constitution, and which I think should respect that. And I'm going to hang on for a second, Bob. We actually have a new face in the studio. Luckily, non-Hispanic, so my racist paranoia is receding here. I'll have to call my therapist soon. Can you scoot over and give that man a chance to sit down, Ryan? You can join him. Grab a second chair. In the studio with me, Bob, is Micah Posner, who's an expert on
Global Warming Posner.
He's an expert on the issue of
Micah Carfree Posner.
That's the man. He's our people power man in Santa Cruz. He has been working to find alternate modes of transportation. A confirmed opponent of the automobile. And a man who's going to also teach Union Pacific a thing or two.
Clearly someone that doesn't believe that the ocean floor should be mined for mineral.
I don't know, Bob, but let's not
nodules.
Jump too far afield. We've been on for 5 minutes here. Is there more that we want to talk about? Are you going to be down there defending the right of people to assemble freely next Wednesday? What do you think?
Well, that's a pretty broad I didn't understand that the First Amendment was under threat.
It is. Be clear. It really is under threat in Santa Cruz. That's my view.
Is it being contained or is it under threat? I think it is being contained.
It's a
perceived
threat.
There are certain things you can't do now. You can't put flyers on cars in parking lots.
You can't read a book in a parking lot for more than 15 minutes. And in fact, you probably can't read a book at all if the police strictly enforce the law. You cannot do any of 150 innocent things you could do 2 months ago.
Well, let me just say hi to Micah Posner and get off the air.
Sounds good.
Micah, how are you?
I'm great. Good to hear your voice, Bob.
Yeah,
it's been too long.
Yeah, you bet. It has been too long. How's the
It's much too
the baby
long.
Girl.
I'm going to cut you off.
How old is your baby girl?
Take care, Bob. Now we're going to talk about the kids later. We have about 25 minutes left, and I want to play a little bit more of this tape of the parking lot drum circle, and we're going to have Micah make a few comments about this and other issues, including his famous March in the Rain. Was it in the rain?
It was in the rain on
Sunday, yeah, on up Union Pacific Rail, in order to take back the public right-of-way that is being threatened by the Union Pacific meanies, who actually, and this has a significant impact on homeless people, since the rail line is a significant transportation corridor down from the Poganip, where a lot of the homeless are known to lurk, perceived threats both to the environment and the community of Santa Cruz.
Oh, wow.
So we may have to take you in and, sentence you to a number of years in jail.
I don't think so.
I would hope not. But I'm glad you're here, because all the rest of us are also, unfortunately, criminals here.
Yes. So what is this about the drumming and the police coming around and this is what it is?
Well, they're using this law.
We're talking about?
Yeah, that's what they're doing. In fact, I want to ask you what you think of this law on camera. Is that okay?
Sure.
All right. So we're talking with
David Jonathan Miles.
And David, you're holding a flag that says "Don't tread on me." I guess you're kind of standing in for a fellow who brought the flag.
Yes, my family fought in the Revolutionary War, Alexander Miles, and then we also fought in the Civil War, and both world wars.
So you got a family of warriors.
Yes.
And here you are.
Yes.
Well, there you are. Thank you very much, and I hope you don't have to do any fighting today.
Me neither. I mostly like to take drugs, play chess, and manifest the great New World Order as promulgated by my brother George Herbert Walker Bush, and I manifest destruction and nuclear war.
Thank you. It's about 20 to 4. Again, the sun is out, and we have a man over here in a tricolor, tri-cornered hat with a feather who is...
legal.
Well, we have an intrusive voice wishes to say...
No, I'm not intrusive. Liberty and freedom. We need to be having the right to sleep on the beach and camp in the forest. This is a basic human right. We must have ethical conscience and good moral behavior.
Uh-huh.
Be harmless and kind and nonviolent.
Well, what about this? Aren't you violating the law here by being in a parking lot without a permit, sir, or a vehicle?
The great spirit and life and earth and the force of the Jedi does invite everyone to enjoy freedom everywhere as long as they are good and not evil, not hurting nobody. They have the right to exist.
Thank you. So we're talking with a man with a dog who I actually have interviewed previously on a videotape. What's your name, sir?
Yes, what do you want?
Uh-oh. Sir, please, tell us who you are.
Contagious, sir.
Who are you?
Yon. That'll do for now.
You are Yon. And what's the name of your dog?
BW is what they tell me.
Now, you're wearing a kind of a snappy outfit. It looks like it's sort of from the past. You have a tricolor hat, tri-cornered hat, I can get that right, with a feather. What make you here at the parking lot?
In the tradition of our founding fathers.
What about that? What about our founding mothers, Mr. Sexist Pig?
Well, I don't know.
You say, how is this in the tradition, walking around in a costumed outfit? What do you intend to do in this parking lot? Do you have a vehicle? Have you parked here?
Petition for rights.
Well, the city council...
To assemble for the common good.
The city council does not meet here. This is not where you would petition for your rights.
One needs to gather support, and that's particularly on the grounds of the that have been denied.
And what rights have been denied, in your view?
The right to assemble for the and consult for the common good, constitutional right. In fact, let me quote chapter and verse here.
And the man in the costume, Yon, as he calls himself, is taking off, is reaching into his satchel for some kind of document, perhaps, or maybe he's going for a weapon. I've got to be careful here. Unusual.
Time-worn copy of the
Constitution. He's got a rather ragged-eared book which has many underlinings, and looks like it's well-worn. He's seeking some section to quote, a biblical scholar, perhaps. No, a constitutional scholar. And when he finds it, we'll get back to him.
Article 1 of the Constitution of California, the people have the right to instruct their representatives, petition government for redress of grievances, and assemble freely to consult for the common good.
Well, you can assemble freely on the sidewalk. Why are you assembling in the parking lot?
We've got a guy who's over here disturbing the peace here.
Well, I think he's simply excited, yes. Why don't you go arrest that man?
And that's some more scenes of merriment from the parking lot yesterday when the people, at the presence of a significant number of people who were willing to take a potential arrest, or at least to take their time in leaving if the police were going to show up and maybe not leave at all, deterred a police sweep, I believe. That's my feeling. Micah, you weren't there, but you would have been... there, perhaps with a bicycle in hand, had you decided to hang out in the parking lot, yes?
Yeah, I walk a lot, but I ride a lot too, and could have had my bicycle with me.
Now, what about this? Do you feel that, isn't it sort of a tempest in a teapot? I mean, being worried about the parking lots. I mean, there are really places for parking vehicles and bikes, not for loitering, right?
Well, I mean, walking is transportation as well.
You can walk through the parking lot.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
You're just not supposed to hang out there. I mean, you can go to a cafe, you can sit on a bench, you can go to a park. Why do you need to lurk about and skulk in a parking lot?
Well, as the other speaker said, discussion regarding the public good, for example.
You could talk about that on the sidewalk. You could go into a bookshop in Santa Cruz and chat with the mayor about that, Ryan Coonerty.
You know, it's funny because we sort of have this idea that space is public, but when you look at a map, there's very little public space left. And in some places are much worse off than Santa Cruz, like L.A., where I come from, where public space is so small that it's in jeopardy. And without public space, we have no sense of public community or public civil behavior or conviviality. So public spaces
can be convivial and civil in private spaces, and many of the private spaces aren't really private. They're public in the sense that all the stores are open to the public. They are they're required to follow the public accommodation laws. We have public streets and sidewalks, public parks. The beaches are public. What are you talking about? There are plenty of public spaces.
I actually don't agree. I think public spaces are under fire in this country.
Actually, I agree
especially.
With you. I'm playing a devil's advocate here.
You are, Robert. Yeah. I mean, it's a sense of civic society, and you know, semi-public spaces that don't allow for the presence of homeless people, for example. Therefore, they don't allow for a complete public discourse in a wholehearted attempt to have a society that includes everyone. If you don't include everyone in your society, then you create fragmented society and anger and dispossession and injustice.
Well, so now you want the criminals, the pickpockets, the violent people all included in your dialogue. Eh, Micah?
Yes.
I see. So in other words, we're going to have a drug dealer row on Pacific Avenue with all your pot salesmen, your meth freaks wandering about causing trouble. I don't think the majority of our community could possibly agree with you, sir.
Well,
is it fair to lump pot dealers with meth freaks?
Yes, or for actually with mad pharmacists and questionable psychiatrists as well. Yeah, that's a good question.
You know, we lose any legitimacy, and in a more pragmatic sense, any control over some elements of society if we refuse to have public discourse with them. So, you know, we can chase the meth dealers off Pacific, but what that means is that we no longer see the meth dealers or have any potential for reforming their behavior or even controlling their behavior, because then, like I gave LA for example, then you have the meth dealers in private spaces away from the public, without the chance of them being reconciled with what I would consider more appropriate behavior. So we don't really have a choice. We can't say, don't exist. And I think I understand this well from being a bicyclist, because, you know, a lot of the transportation infrastructure, like Caltrans's idea about Mission Street, is that cyclists should just vanish. Poof! You know, they're inconvenient. And that ain't going to happen. We exist. We're going to continue to exist, as are people whom, frankly, I'd rather they change their behavior. But they are part of our society, and they exist, and it behooves us to interact with them.
Well, it's been suggested that people who are trying to reclaim public spaces are going to be facing some conundrums next week at the farmer's market, the parking lot, because the law that was passed by the city council, I think by 5-2 or 6-1 vote, is pretty clear. It states that all the public parking lots in the downtown area, all the garages, and all the parking lots and garages adjacent to the downtown area are no-go zones unless you're walking directly through or parking or retrieving a vehicle, and then only for 15 minutes if you are doing that parking and retrieving a vehicle. So if you walk in there next Wednesday, as we did this last Wednesday and I've been doing every Wednesday, and hang out there, set up a political table, try to register voters, try to feed people, give information out about people power. You give out literature about people power next week, that's illegal in that parking lot, unless you're in the process of retrieving your bicycle or car. You prepared to take a $220 ticket to deal with that issue? What's your reaction going to be when a police officer comes up to you and says, Mr. Posner, why don't you take that out to the sidewalk? It's right over there. It's 20 feet away. Why don't you just give out your pamphlets over there?
Well, I mean, I'd like to say, I mean, I'm inspired by you asking me the questions. I'd like to say I'm going to stand up and, you know, and join the cause.
You're a family man. You've got a young child. You're trying to make a living. You afford to pay this kind of a fine? Maybe you'll pay it once. What about the next time they come after you in the parking lot?
Well, I think more to the point, I've managed to become a spokesperson and leader in one particular segment of transportation, which does and having public space and transportation is part of that. And I do at times engage in acts of civil disobedience.
Like last Sunday, for instance.
Like that Sunday, right.
Tell me about that.
I'll probably save my court cases for the transportation sector to answer your question.
So in other words, you will avoid violating the law, and you will avoid exercising your freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of the press, freedom of religion rights. Don't try to preach in a parking lot.
Who knows? Maybe I'll get inspired. The pragmatic side of me says save your tickets for your own part of the movement. But I'm certainly, the more I talk to you, the more I feel like, oh my God, it really is outrageous. And if I had all the time and money in the world, I'd certainly stand up.
Well, tell me about what you are protesting, because you were risking a citation along with the same supervisor who gave us all these crappy laws downtown, Neil Coonerty, when he was mayor of Santa Cruz. You and he and, 50 to 100 other people?
No, it was 25.
Only 25, because the rain kind of dwindled the numbers.
Yeah, it was pouring rain.
You walked up the railroads from where to where?
We just walked over from Kelly's on the west side of town, the far west side of town, over to Bay Street, to the Neary Lagoon park there. Mm-hmm. It's really very pleasant walk. It's faster than most people would imagine. I think it took 25 minutes to walk from the far west side of town to Bay Street. Mm-hmm. And we had a historian with us, Ross Gibson, who talked about some of the history of the rail line in the area. And it was a pleasant walk.
No, I mean, police escort, perhaps?
There was no police escort.
It was announced, however, beforehand, so people knew it was happening, right?
Oh, yeah. Union Pacific definitely knew it was happening. The Sentinel covered it. We were on the front page. I think it's one of those instances where the corporate greed, in this case of Union Pacific, is just so out of line with what most people think that I don't think the police are going to actually give out any tickets for people walking the line. Certainly they didn't when we publicly announced that we were going to do it. The police weren't there. And I think it's because the police at heart, you know, as much as we sometimes disagree with them, they're also working class people, and they think it's outrageous and ridiculous. They probably walk the tracks themselves. So
particularly when there is a supervisor walking with you. I would say when the homeless people begin coming out of the Poganip at 6 or 7 in the morning, and the police officers and Ranger John Wallace are laying in wait for them, you can bet your butt there are going to be tickets coming out of those ticket books.
Well, they've arranged plenty of other things to ticket homeless people for. I don't think they're going to bother with the
whatever's
the railroad
convenient,
tracks.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean,
I do know that when we built the Gorilla Rail Trail, because we built a few sections of rail trail without permission from Union Pacific, and the police were very respectful. I remember there was one policeman who came by, and he said, yeah, Union Pacific called me, so I guess you have to leave, but God, it looks kind of bumpy over there. You want to sort of finish that up before you go?
Mm-hmm.
So
you're a couple of we only have about like 10 minutes left. There are a couple of subjects you wanted to cover. One of them had to do with a dispute on around property about closing and a thoroughfare, a walkway thoroughfare up near the church on the top of the hill.
Yeah, I do want to get to that. Let me just try to wrap up about the railroad tracks, though, because I hope people weren't intimidated when Union Pacific did that kind of saber rattling, talked about giving out fines. I really want to encourage you, just like Robert is encouraging us to use our rights or lose them in the parking lots. It's the same with the Union Pacific Railway. I really think that if we continue to enjoy that corridor, that eventually, actually not eventually, but soon, in the next few years, we will own it and it will be public property. So let's not please don't be easily intimidated by that corporation. Keep enjoying the tracks. I bet a lot of you out there are walking them and riding them.
You will be providing legal services to homeless people who get hassled on those tracks. So.
Well, I don't know.
Indeed. So what other bits of middle-class wisdom do you have for us?
Well, I take offense to that. Because I don't think it's necessary to divide people up in classes around these issues. I think that's part of the problem. Like, a fight for public space and for freedom of expression is something that people of all classes should care about. Now, I admit that it tends to divide up along class lines, but that's part of the problem. So,
well, no, I was actually commenting quite specifically. I asked you, what are you going to do when the first homeless person calls and says, Ranger John Wallace, along with a couple of railroad dicks, although you were telling me there's only one railroad dick around these
days. For the whole state of California,
probably. The whole state of California. But, you know, right. Local police agency comes down and says, you get a ticket, mister. You're trespassing on the rail line.
Uh-huh.
And then are you gonna defend him? Are you going to put up money for his defense? Or what are you going to do? Are you going to say, Well, it's very inspiring what you did. Now I'm moving on to my next, meeting of the People Power Group, and we'll be talking about other things.
Right.
In other words, what's real here and what you're suggesting? I'm not going to be defending him, I'll tell you that. I'm not going to put out my resources to defend every person, but we are doing a sleeping ban lawsuit.
Right.
Well, we did get some lawyers together to do that. So, I mean, and we will put pressure in other ways. So I'd like to say, make it real clear what we're willing to do and what we're not willing to do.
Right. Right. Well, what People Power is willing to do with regard to the tracks is try to make sure it never gets enforced. And I can't say that that will apply in every case, of course, because we know that law enforcement sometimes unduly goes after homeless people. But we're trying to make it so it's so that idea of trespassing from this corporation is not enforced. And then secondly, and that's part of the movement to get the public to buy the tracks. Neil Coonerty is one of the people empowered to buy the line. So if we're successful, the rail line will be public property, and then we'll have a lot more leverage for protecting everyone's right to be there, including homeless people.
Well, then the sleeping ban can apply throughout the railroad tracks as well as elsewhere, because after all public property in Santa Cruz is covered by the sleeping ban. One of Neil Coonerty's favorite laws, actually.
Well, then, and
that's
then,
not really fair. I don't know if it's one of his favorite laws, but it certainly is
one part
he's
of it,
challenged.
Yeah. Yeah, well, then we'll have a much better chance of fighting the sleeping ban. You're certainly not going to have any traction with Union Pacific about homeless people using that corridor. Once it's publicly owned, you'll have a better platform to challenge those kind of unjust laws.
You would think so, but the platform we have doesn't seem to make much sense, or doesn't seem to have much much pushing power. But you also have been covering other areas where you've engaged in civil disobedience, or let's say... It's a little hard to say whether that's civil disobedience. I guess in a way it is. I think someone was putting to me online the fact that, well, why are you guys grumbling when the police show up at the parking lots? You're engaging in civil disobedience. You want them to show up. And the answer is no. We want them to leave us the fuck alone so we can exercise basic constitutional rights. We're not interested in court cases and getting arrested. That's not the interest. The interest is in restoring the balance. And is that perhaps what you're trying to do with... the Union Pacific line, and also this other situation which you're now going to tell us about.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, Robert. I appreciate that. That makes a lot more sense. Yeah, I just want to point out to people who are listening to Pirate Radio right now that in Santa Cruz, as in everywhere else in the country, there's this movement on the part mainly of landlords, in fact, almost exclusively of landlords, to cut off small little public walkways. And these walkways are really important parts of our overall transportation system, as well as valuable public space. So the latest struggle we're engaged in, a bunch of neighbors who live up by the Holy Cross Church came to us and said, oh my gosh, this absentee landlord is conspiring with the local priest to cut off this walkway we've been using for 80 years.
Name of the local priest?
His name is Father Mark
at
Holy Cross Church. Now, since then, before everyone gets too upset at the church, the bishop and the diocese have offered to cooperate with getting the easement back. So there's been a lot of give and take on the church. And it could be that the father was ignorant and he was fooled. I don't know. But anyways, the landlord's name is Mr. Mahoney. I forget his first name, but he lives up in Reading somewhere and owns the property next to the church. And
why does he care if he's so far away? What's
exactly right. I wish I knew. And I've been trying to understand the psychology of fear around these closures.
The issue, again, is this is a public area which both these property owners now want to privatize.
Presumably the church does, and certainly Mr. Mahoney does. He wants to cut it off so that no one can walk on the side of his property. Now, there's like an eight-foot wall, between concrete wall between the path and his property, but somehow he feels, on behalf of his renters, not even on behalf of himself because he doesn't live there, but on behalf of his renters, he feels an amazing amount of fear that something terrible could happen from the side.
The perception of danger is...
As Bob LaMonica put it, exactly, the perception of danger. So
isn't that very important? Isn't that what we want to really pay attention to and have direct our public policy, the perception of danger? I mean, as Bob put it...
I think it's very important.
It's not a bunch of horse shit, frankly.
It's a bunch of very important horse shit. I mean, it's important that we try to understand it so that we can try to combat it and to try to help. I mean... We've tried to help Mr. Mahoney. I mean, we've said, look, you know, the church just got a grant to put up video cameras. We said, look, we'll put video cameras on the, you know, whatever you want, you know, because there is no danger there. That's the thing. So, you know, we'd like to help him with his perception of danger, but we certainly don't want to let his fear take over our public policy. And that's not the only place. There's a important gate at Kennan Street that...
Where is Kennan Street?
Kennan is just off the river levee, between the river levee and Ocean Street. North of Water Street, between Water and the freeway. And there was a gate that led from the end of Kennan Street to the river path. And the landlord that owns that place sort of blackmailed the city into closing it. Because
I had a conversation about that at the city council about 2 or 3 years ago when that happened.
Yeah, so in the end, the city gave in to the demands, but they did some really good negotiating and sort of begging, I guess, and they got the gate open during daylight hours, which is better than nothing, so it was kind of a compromise. And then there was another pathway near Ocean View Condominiums that's really actually an important transportation pathway for biking and pedestrians that lets you go to those neighborhoods from the River Levee or San Lorenzo. And they tried
to
close
ride along the River Levee at night, for God's sake. I mean, we don't want any. That could be a real perception of danger there.
I ride along the River Levee at night all the time. My 2-year-old and I walk along the River Levee at night because we live right by the river.
We'll probably kind of contact CPS about this after the show.
Right.
Go ahead.
Right, but this idea, this perception of danger is, if we allow that to guide public policy, then we have a society that's driven by our lowest common denominator fear.
Well, I can think of it as a high aspiration. So, for instance, once some of our national leaders have pointed out the danger, the imminent danger of nuclear weapons in the hands of Iran and Iraq.
Right.
And we know about the weapons that have been discovered in Iraq and secreted over to Syria behind our back. So that luckily the U.S. troops are there defending our freedom. Certainly want the same kind of security here at home from the terrorist incidents that may happen any day, right?
There's so many layers of sarcasm there. I'm not sure how I can follow you. But if the point you're making is that at the highest level, the federal government, that's exactly how we're operating, this lowest common denominator fear, I couldn't agree more. And there's all these Santa Cruzans that are like, down with Bush, we don't want that federal policy. But then, can we stand up locally to this fear, whether it's at the farmer's market drum circle or whether it's on the little path in the neighborhood at Holy Cross Church or whether it's on the Union Pacific Railroad? If we want to have a different kind of society than the one that Bush is presenting, we have to start at home. We have to have the courage to stand up to this fear of the unknown and this perception that anyone who's not me is a terrorist.
Well, I think we know what color your underwear is, Mr. Posner. So, actually, where can people get more information about these issues, as if I didn't know, but why don't you tell us?
Hey, you can give us a call at People Power, which is 425-0665. Or you can see our website, PeoplePowerSC for Santa Cruz, PeoplePowerSC.org. And we really need help both on these little issues like the Holy Cross Church path. In fact, it looks like on that particular path we have a good legal case, and we could use funds for doing a case for prescriptive easement. So if people out there want to give to good cause, that would be really helpful.
Caller, you're on the air in the last 2 minutes of our show with Micah, Brian, and Robert. Hello there.
Hi, I had a question for Micah.
Go ahead.
I was wondering if he's going to join in to the parking lot law drummers stand in there, and in some way is he going to be in, try to get involved in supporting that?
Well, I think Micah said that he wants to put his eggs in the right basket, lest they all be scrambled and broken at the prematurely. He wants to temperately gauge what is a prudent use of his resources. Answer for yourself.
I don't know. Because I do this kind of politics full time, I'm more inclined to work on things involving transportation. I did write a letter to city council that I CC'd to Robert saying that I can't speak for People Power, it's not really transportation issues, but as a person, I don't think that's a good law, and I asked them not to make it. And, I don't know if I'm talking to a friend in the market and someone tries to move me out, maybe I'll stay like any other citizen. It's not a focus of my political activity because I try to stay more narrowly focused, but
Well, how about as a drummer or a dancer?
Yeah, I'm not actually a drummer or dancer. I don't have much rhythm, but I'm just one of the tens of thousands, probably the majority of people in Santa Cruz that don't support those laws, and we may not be willing to be on the front lines like Robert is, but we care, and we want to express our opinion that which is what I'm doing now.
Yeah. I think that they should be able to have a good time around the fair, the market, so because it is a social event, and also that people who can gather there that can meet each other to feed each other, which is what they do there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a great thing to support, even just to say, right on, you guys, take your space so you have a place to be, just even though there's very little of it left for you.
Right on, you guys. Take this place so you have a space to be.
Yeah.
talk is cheap anyway. Here, you guys. Let's get down to the nitty gritty. Now, it's interesting that, and we're Uncle Dennis is about to come bundling in and, from the rain, and we'll end this conversation. Any more questions or comments, caller?
Nope. Thank you.
Thank you. There has been a suggestion that the parking lot panic law does allow for 15 minutes to retrieve and park a bike. So if a police officer came up and saw a pile of nondescript bikes in the middle of the parking lot, and he wondered who those were, and they said, oh, these are collectively owned by this whole group of people over here, that they would all be, you could say, well, you can't stay here. A person could pick up a bike around the block, come back, and then spend 15 minutes parking or retrieving it. And you suggested that there might be ways to do this by purchasing a number of low-income bikes for this purpose. Although we've seen that actually just exercising ordinary constitutional rights and just doing drumming and talking and eating food has not been challenged by the police when there are large numbers of people who they know are going to resist it. So maybe the more straightforward approach is to just continue acting in an ordinary fashion. I don't know. Next week. That's because I'm looking forward to next week on Wednesday. And, of course, you're... Perhaps you would be wandering a lot, giving out people's power literature.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah. Well, I'm going over time here because I'm finding that my normally this space is immediately being seized by Uncle Dennis from the cream to the dregs, and that should be happening shortly. In fact, I think I'm going to put on a little music in the hopes that Uncle Dennis will put on some better music when he arrives.
Well, I just wanted to thank you for having me on the show, Robert, and for your work around protecting public space and protecting the rights of people in an equanimous manner across the board.
Are you considering political maneuvers like running for a city council in the next election, this year, I should say?
I'm always considering specific political maneuvers. I'm not heavily considering city council. I feel like partially through the support of people like Neil Coonerty and yourself, we have this broad spectrum of people that care about people power, and I'm pretty happy doing my work there.
Hitler on one side, Stalin on the other.
Wait, which one is which? I kind of doubt it because I feel like I'm thanks to the community, I feel like I'm pretty satisfied with my work right now.
Well, what's coming up next? In your bailiwick, do you think we should know about? I know that we are pretty close to having a sufficient number of plaintiffs for the sleeping ban lawsuit, and I believe, at least we got the promises from the attorneys, that the pleadings will start to be drawn up soon. That means, you know, the specific cases of each person, the arguments why the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz is cruel and unusual punishment, given the fact that there's shelter for 160 people and 1,500 to 2,000 people out there, so obviously no way for people to get legal shelter, and their only option is to violate the law. And then the police supposedly say, well, you can get the tickets dismissed later on. All you got to do is go to court with a letter, although apparently referee Kim Baskett is not taking those letters from some people. We got a report from a woman who went into Commissioner Baskett, actually. She's the woman in the basement of the county building that normally you'd see on any infraction cases, and we've urged you in the past to disqualify her because she's a kind of a fine-generating bureaucrat, as far as I'm concerned. No offense to her personally as an individual, but that seems to be what she does. And so the best thing to do is to send up to a higher court where you get more bullshit from better educated judges. But nonetheless, in theory, you have more rights, for example, you have the right to a jury trial eventually on some issues. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to point out that Commissioner Baskett's been great in setting up a program where if you get a ticket for riding your bicycle, you now can go to traffic school and not have to pay a fine. So she's been good about that. And as long as I'm defending people, I want to point out that the Coonerties they keep up a pretty public space and help create a town full of public space. And I disagree with where to draw the line, but we're all part of the same community,
we'll talk about Baskett's fine ticket activities in the future. But I think that's similar to the issue of homeless courts. Mm-hmm. These things shouldn't be crimes to begin with. The kind of tickets people.
I agree. I'm just pointing out that it's nice to disagree with these folks.
Yeah, and I thank you. That's it for Bathroom Spears Broadsides. We're beginning a little late because Uncle Dennis here is late again. Dennis, get it together, old man. Thanks for being with us on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Come on back on Sunday. I'll be there at 9:30, and we'll talk some more.
That's Deep Purple from a long, long time ago, a little tune called Hush. I'm Uncle Dennis, and you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 and www.freakradio.org here on a Thursday night, a wet, cold, dark Thursday night. in Santa Cruz. Hope it's better where you are, but that's not what I read in the weather reports. It's pretty much winter wherever you go around the world, at least Northern Hemisphere. So what we're going to do here is we're going to be playing music from the 60s and the 70s, a little rock and roll for your enjoyment tonight. Of course, we'll open up the Brew of the Week. We have a sort of special Brew of the Week tonight, a new entree into the Cream to the Dregs repertoire. Of course, at 9 o'clock, the Earth First Update with environmental news you can use. And then 10 o'clock, we'll have an hour-long special of one group or another called the Spotlight Group of the Week. So stay tuned for all of that. What can I say? That, free radio is the place to be. And so kick back and enjoy.
There's a killer